wonderful, majestic world around us, it's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
This week on Dear Science, I was joined by AUT Professor Alan Blackman, where we talked about the mathematicians who have discovered that music can really be infectious, the Soviet era's deadly scientists returning to popularity in Russia, and the incredible life of American astronomer Carolyn Shoemaker.
Let's start talking about the mathematicians who discovered music can really be infectious.
Indeed, yeah, it gives a new meaning to the word earworm, I think.
But this is
very interesting. So there's a bunch of scientists at McMaster University in Canada, and as you say, mathematicians, maths and stats people. And I guess we've had our fill of infectious disease over the last sort of couple of years. So for some reason, goodness knows why, they decided to have a look at the pattern of music downloads and compare that to epidemic curves for infectious disease. And surprise, surprise, they found that there was a very, very good correlation between the two, basically saying that music downloads operate in the same way as infectious disease does, which is not exactly what you'd think, I guess. And this has just been published in a very good journal, Proceedings of the Royal Society. So what they did, they took the top 1,000 songs that have been downloaded in the UK over the years 2007 to 2014. And then they took a thing called the SIR, the SIR model, which is the standard model for epidemic disease. And what they found was that the trends in the downloads over time fitted the SIR model. And what that then implies, which is kind of sensible when you think about it, is that both music and infectious diseases rely on social connections to spread through populations. And, you know, that makes an awful lot of sense, really, because, you know, how many times do you find a song from your mate or something like that? You know, oh, you know, have a listen to this. This is great. Obviously, we're now in the world of social media as well. So therefore, things can spread a lot more rapidly. Now, we used, thanks to COVID-19, to this idea of an R number. You know, we've heard a lot about the fact that we have to get our R number down below one. And remember, an R number of one means that one person will infect one other person. And it's the same sort of thing with this whole music thing as well, that this also has an R number. And this is kind of interesting. So for some different genres of music, here are some different R numbers. So the genres of music that are least infectious, if you will, have R numbers between 2.8 and 3.7 are dance and metal. So pop has an R number of 35, rock 129, rap 310, and the winner is electronica with an R number of 3,430. That means one. Yeah, I know. So electronica really is, well, as they say in the paper, it's 190 times more transmissible than measles.
Infectious electronica, my goodness.
Absolutely. And now that doesn't mean that electronica gets downloaded any more than any other genre. It's just that it's more infectious, let's say, that you get a faster spread throughout a particular population. So maybe the electronica population are very, very sort of tight-knit. They're strongly connected. They're very, very active, whereas on the other hand, pop is more perhaps a passive type of infection, if you will. It's generally sort of transmitted through the radio, whereas, you know, electronica, you know, very much your Instagrams and, you know, and your Spotify's and all of that sort of stuff. So, yeah, it's interesting. I don't know what made them take this up in the first instance, but it's kind of an interesting result. And just a final thing on that, it's led me to look up, for no reason whatsoever, what the most downloaded songs are on Spotify. And, oh my God, it is Ed Sheeran, I hate to say it. But surprisingly and amazingly to me, out of the top 100 downloaded songs on Spotify, two of them come pre-2000. Only two.
Wow.
Everything is from 2000 onwards, except for, no, I won't make you guess, Bohemian Rhapsody and Wonderwall.
There you go. I wonder if that's something to do with Spotify as a modern streaming platform. But
hey, come on, I've got Spotify.
Well done, Alan. Let's move on to the second story, which is not so funny, about the Soviet era's deadliest scientist and his regaining of popularity in Russia.
Yeah, I know, it's a worry, isn't it? So often when I do this, I look up, you know, people's birthdays and anniversaries and stuff like that for something interesting to talk about, because I'm a big believer in history. Those who forget history are condemned to repeat it. So sadly, today is the birthday of one Trofim Lysenko, who was born in 1898 to some peasant parents. And he rose up, sadly, to get a position of great power in the Soviet Union, the USSR, whatever you want to call it. And basically, his possible claim to fame is that he's the scientist who has killed more people in human history than any other scientist. And that actually seems to be a fair enough comment. So what did he do? Well, he was not a fan of genetics, basically. And not being a fan of genetics, Stalin saw fit to put him in charge of Soviet agriculture, which was really not a good idea. So this was in the late 1920s. And Lysenko was doing work with peas in particular, trying to get them to grow at different times of the year. So he was trying to increase Soviet production of all sorts of things, peas, wheat, etc., etc., etc. So what he did, so genetics was sort of undergoing a resurgence at that stage. So that was discovered by Mendel in the 19th century. And people sort of coming to terms with, yep, genetics is the way that things work. Genes are passed on, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that's how you get your, you know, your curly hair and your blue eyes and all that sort of stuff. So genetic traits. So he, instead of being a geneticist, was really a Marxist. So he said that the environment alone shapes plants and animals. Okay. And so in other words, you can basically force them to do your will. And so what he tried to do was to, quote unquote, educate Soviet crops to sprout at unusual or different times of the year. And one way that he did this, he took winter wheat, and what he would do, he'd freeze it. He would cool the winter wheat in freezing water, or the wheat seeds, and so that the winter crops could then be grown in spring. And apparently winter wheat gives you better yields and stuff like that. And so he reckoned, right, he can make them grow in spring, which is going to be a better time because it won't be killed off by the winter. And most importantly, that the offsprings of these crops, the seeds of these crops, will remember this trait and be able to grow in the spring. And that just sort of goes against everything that genetics actually says. So what he did, he went to Stalin, he said, right, I'm going to boost your numbers of crops in the USSR. Another thing that he did was he said, right, it's okay to plant seeds really, really, really close together, because being a Marxist, he said that seeds of the same class won't interfere with each other. They won't compete with each other. And so it's fine to grow things really, really close together, which obviously it's not. He also said, right, we don't need fertilizers. We don't need pesticides, et cetera, et cetera. So the net result of all of this, he had a 163-fold increase in farmland. And using his methods, he actually got a decrease in crop production, okay? And this led to famine in the USSR. Some estimates say 7 million people died as a result of the famine in the Ukraine in the early 1930s. Really, really sadly, these ideas also took hold in communist China in the late 1950s, and they had massive famines there, and about 30 million people died. So Lysenko got put in charge of Soviet genetics, and if you disagreed with him, then you ended up in a gulag, labor camp, prison, whatever. One of his early great defenders, a botanist, for God's sake, a botanist by the name of Nikolai Vavilov, was sentenced to death for disagreeing with him. It was commuted to life in prison. He ended up dying, apparently, of starvation in prison. And extraordinarily, Lysenko remained in power until 1964. So this is a whole 11 years after Stalin died, Stalin being his great defender. Then the madness was seen and he ended up dying in obscurity in 1976. So as you say, really, unfortunately, seems to be undergoing a bit of a resurgence in Russia at the moment, with this whole thing about sort of the mistrust of science, the anti-Western sort of thing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And oh, God help us all, really. So, yeah, it's his birthday today. Not a great scientist. One would hesitate to call him a scientist, really.
Yeah, and wouldn't rush to say happy birthday Who am I? All right, let's move on to another, I guess it's a sad bit to be celebrated, the life of Caroline Shoemaker. Tell me about her.
And I don't know how many people listening at the moment would remember 1994, July 1994, when the name Shoemaker Levy was all over the news. And if you sort of say that to people today, they probably don't know it. But as I say, it was making headlines at that time. And the reason was because this was a comet, Comet Shoemaker Levy 9. And this comet actually collided with Jupiter. And this was quite amazing because this was essentially the first time where we could see this happening in real time. The Hubble Space Telescope had just essentially come online at that stage, and they got some remarkable pictures of the comet impacting with Jupiter, crashing into Jupiter, and leaving this enormous sort of mark on the surface of the planet, or certainly in the clouds anyway, that was very, very easily seen. And it was estimated that this collision was of the energy roughly about 600 times all of the world's nuclear arsenal. This was a big, big, big explosion. And, you know, this shows that, gosh, we really are at the mercy of all of these things that are flying around in the solar system, and that if this ever happened on Earth, yeah, it wouldn't be great. But, so the discoverer of Comet Shoemaker-Levy 9 was one Caroline Shoemaker, and she was, in fact, a 51-year-old housewife who decided to take up looking for comets. Now, her husband was an astrogeologist, so he was interested in that sort of things, and that sort of thing, so she thought she'd give him a hand. And not only did she give him a hand, she ended up discovering the greatest number of comets at the time that any one person had ever discovered. So she discovered by herself 32 comets and 377 asteroids. And, you know, that's remarkable. We're talking about her today because sadly she passed away last month at the ripe old age of 92. And she will be, I guess, forever remembered for her remarkable discoveries. Certainly Comet Shoemaker-Levy 9, that's, you know, absolutely gone down in history. The fact that she had discovered all of those comets, and again, not really or not at all a trained scientist, but, you know, basically just sort of took it up because it interested her. She ended up wonderfully getting honorary doctorates. She got the Scientist of the Year Award. She got a NASA Exceptional Scientific Achievement Award, and all remarkably well-deserved. And, you know, I think this is a nice story of basically the fact that, you know, if something interests you, then for goodness sake, just get out there and do it. You can do anything. You know, it's a wonderful story, and she should be remembered. And very, very fittingly, she has an asteroid named after her. So asteroid 4446 Caroline is named after her. So I think that's a really fitting memento. Yeah, fabulous.
Absolutely. What a fantastic story.
That's yeah, beautiful. Yeah.
I wonder if she has Spotify or had Spotify. Listening to Bohemian Rhapsody.
That was Alan Blackman on this week's Dear Science, talking with me about mathematicians and the Soviet era and Caroline Shoemaker.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.